Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Friday morning. It's May 23rd. Hope you're having a great Friday and wishing you a beautiful Memorial Day weekend. Many people already on the road or in the air, heading for a long weekend or maybe an early, not quite summer vacation. This is the unofficial start of summer. More importantly, though, Memorial Day will be honoring all those who lost their lives in the military for our country. And we'll have a special focus on that on the Monday show. A little bit more on that later. Let's let you know what's coming up on a Friday morning. And a big thank you to my friend Tom Price from EW10 Radio for keeping things running back in Irondale while Richard Jesse, my EP, executive producer, has a well-deserved Friday off. We have the one, the only Doug Keck. Speaking of EWTN, our president and, of course, chief operating officer, he's going to give us the inside word, taking a look at coverage of upcoming events. And if you look at the Holy Father's schedule, the Holy Father is going to be, as we reported yesterday, celebrating Mass every weekend, not to mention activities during the week. But every Sunday through June, he has a major event, a major Mass tied in with either the Jubilee year or different feast days, including Corpus Christi at the end of the month. It is a beautiful, busy schedule, and we will be there. You betcha. And we'll have Doug tell us all about that. At the bottom of the hour, it's time for our Fact Check Friday, and there is a new report. Shocker. Wait, you're going to be so shocked. Let's see. What are the media doing? Well, not much when it comes to telling the truth about the Biden bombshells. A new report from our friends at Newsbusters, part of the Media Research Center, covering up the cover-up. ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS spend only 7 minutes on the Biden decline bombshells. 7 minutes. Seven. We'll discuss. And we'll also let you know what's coming up in the second hour of the program as well a little bit later on. Now it's time to take a look at the weather and see if we have any rough weather coming through. And yes, unfortunately, we do. We have areas of severe thunderstorms and excessive rainfall. And they're saying this is going to occur throughout the weekend, so hopefully it won't impact your plans or too many Memorial Day parades. Severe thunderstorms are expected across portions of the central and to southern plains into Sunday. And still they're looking at large hail. They say large hail with severe gusts are the main threats, and the threat for heavy to excessive rain and possibly flash flooding will return to the south central part of the country Friday into the weekend. So that is a look at the weather across the country, the National Weather Service. And don't forget, we have Doug Keck coming up. We have Fact Check Friday. And we are going to be talking about some very interesting topics in the second hour as well, so you don't want to miss it, including Marian Shrines and also a brand new book, Visions of the Divine, from our friend Stephen Auth. It's a beautiful book, and we shall discuss. It is 3 minutes past the hour. It's a Friday morning. We're so glad you're tuned to the one, the only EWTN. Right now, though, on a Friday, we need to check the news here on EWTN. Well, Mark Mayfield tells us the suspect in Wednesday's deadly shooting of two Israeli embassy staff members in Washington, D.C. is being formally charged.
Interim U.S. Attorney for the District of Washington, Janine Pirro, made the announcement.
Murder in the first degree for the murder of 30-year-old Yaron Levshinsky, a foreign official and official guest of the United States. Mr. Levshinsky was here on official business for the state of Israel.
Elias Rodriguez faces two counts of first-degree murder, along with murder of foreign officials and two firearm-related charges. Rodriguez was taken into custody following the shooting outside of the Capitol Jewish Museum. He's reported to have shouted Free Palestine while he was being arrested. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi says the death penalty for Rodriguez is a possibility. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And a candlelight vigil, meanwhile, was held near the White House last night, honoring the two Israeli embassy staffers killed in that shooting just mentioned in Washington. Dozens of people lighting candles and singing in memory of 26-year-old Sarah Milgram and 30-year-old Yaron Levshinsky. The suspect, Elias Rodriguez, again, as you just heard, charged with first-degree murder and other counts, taken into custody following the shooting outside the Capitol Jewish Museum. Authorities are also investigating the case as a possible hate crime and terrorist attack. In other news this morning, a bill banning Texas cities from using taxpayer money to fund out-of-state abortion travel is now on its way to Governor Greg Abbott's desk. The Texas House approving the measure yesterday by an 87-58 vote, with two Democrats joining Republicans in supporting the measure. The Senate passing the bill last month, Austin City Council allocating $400,000 to pay for lodging and traveling expenses of Texas residents who get abortions in other states. The new law would prohibit such an arrangement. Catholic news agency reporting that Delaware Governor Matt Meyer this week signing a bill legalizing physician-assisted suicide for terminally ill adults with a prognosis of 6 months or less to live. The law goes into effect next January, allowing patients to self-administer lethal medication, and it makes Delaware the 11th state to legalize euthanasia. So far, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington, along with the District of Columbia, also permit that practice. Wilmington Bishop William Koenig has been urging Delaware residents to oppose a measure, saying in April, "There's a great distinction between, on the one hand, death that comes naturally, and on the other hand, performing actions to bring on death." The Supreme Court is blocking what would have been the nation's first publicly funded religious charter school. The case is out of Oklahoma, where there were plans for a Catholic virtual school. The state Supreme Court, though, shot it down, saying it was unconstitutional. That was appealed to the nation's highest court, which was split at 4-4. When that happens, the lower court's ruling is then upheld. The justices did not explain their vote. Justice Amy Coney Barrett recused herself from the case, leading to split decision. The ruling only applies to Oklahoma, meaning there is not a nationwide precedent for publicly funded religious charter schools. The U.S. and Iran now set to hold another round of nuclear talks. Reps from both nations will be meeting today in Rome with a U.S. contingent led by Middle East Special Envoy Steve Witkoff. The U.S. is calling for Iran to halt its uranium enrichment program, but the Islamic Republic has rejected those demands in the past. Iran maintains its nuclear program is for civilian purposes. The White House saying yesterday President Trump believes a potential deal with the country is moving along in the right direction. And Catholic news agency also telling us that the president of Peru and the minister of foreign trade and tourism have now officially in the country. It's known as Paths of Pope Leo XIV, seeking to highlight the places where the Holy Father, of course, formerly known as Bishop Robert Frivos, exercised his pastoral ministry. And it covers four of the country's regions and key locations of the ministry of the man who is now the Pope, the first Peruvian citizen to become Pope. In addition to churches and religious sites, that route also includes other attractions such as museums, beaches, and nature reserves. And authorities in Southern California, as Daniel Martindale tells us, are announcing the arrests of 265 suspected child predators.
The so-called Operation Spring Cleaning, led by the Los Angeles Police Department, spanned Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. The suspects are accused of using the internet to exploit children. The arrests were made between April 6th and 19th, following undercover investigations across different social media platforms. The LAPD says some of the suspects were employed or placed in a role that gave them direct contact with children. I'm Daniel Martindale.
Harvard can no longer enroll foreign students. That's according to Homeland Security Chief Kristi Noem, who sent a letter to Harvard informing them that their ability to enroll foreign students at their university has now been revoked. The letter stating the university has not fully complied with all reporting requirements to DHS, including providing detailed records of foreign students' misconduct on campus. And the pilot of that doomed plane asked air traffic control about weather reports before crashing into a San Diego neighborhood yesterday morning.
Just out there, a little better, but higher minimum, so probably not a great option either.
Six people dead after a private jet crash. Authorities say the Cessna 550 had six people on board when it flew into a patch of dense fog, clipping a power line and crashing into a house early yesterday in North San Diego. Music agency Salient Sound Talent Group said three of its employees were killed in the crash, including co-founder David Shapiro and former drummer for the metalcore band The Devil Wears Prada. Daniel Williams was also reportedly on that plane. No one on the ground was hurt, but around 100 residents did have to be evacuated after the crash led to several house fires. Federal authorities are still investigating the cause of that crash. And the Health Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., says his Make America Healthy Again report is a call to action for common sense.
It's common sense that not all calories are equal in nutritional value. It's common sense that over-medicating kids is dangerous.
He says it's a roadmap to federal agencies that federal agencies can use to reduce chronic childhood illnesses. At the top of the list, he says, is a poor diet, with an estimated 70% of children getting their calories from ultra-processed foods. Other main points from his report include too many environmental chemicals in our food chain, a lack of activity and chronic stress, and an overprescription of medication for children. Kennedy says the U.S. must act decisively to reverse the childhood chronic disease crisis. And swim safety at the top of mind as we head into this Memorial Day weekend. Miren Oka with Miami-Dade's Drowning Prevention Coalition says just because your children have taken swimming lessons does not mean they're water safe. So always designate what she described as a water watcher.
Because unfortunately, we hear like when there are a lot of adults watching the children by the water, no one is really 100% devoted to watching. Everybody thinks somebody else is really watching and paying attention.
She says you can think of safety and layers of protection, from lessons to pool fences and gate alarms. Nearly 100 people drowned in South Florida last year alone. And a Denver-based airline is again leading all U.S. carriers when it comes to consumer complaints. A report from the Colorado Public Interest Research Group says it's Frontier Airlines with just over 23 complaints for every 100,000 passengers it served last year. Spirit finishing second in complaints, around 300 per 100,000 passengers. And the report also notes that complaints along U.S. airlines jumping 9% last year, while passenger numbers only increased by 4%. AAA is expecting a record number of us to travel for this Memorial Day holiday weekend. AAA's Robert Sinclair saying more than 45 million people will go 50 miles or more from home, and that beats a 20-year-old record.
Surprising given the economy and all that's going on. But I think the big X factor is gasoline prices, which are so much cheaper compared to a year ago, upwards of about 50 cents cheaper.
Hope you're having a great Friday. 16 minutes past the hour, you're listening to the one, the only EWTN. Speaking of which, on the air with us, as he is every Friday, Doug Keck, our President and Chief Operating Officer, with our inside word. You know, Doug, I was looking at the Pope's schedule for the next month. The Vatican and CNA had it yesterday, and I'm like, wow. Every weekend, he has some, not to mention everything that's going on during the week, but every weekend he has a beautiful Mass, something tied into either a feast day or the Jubilee year, but just crazy busy. And I know we're covering most, if not all of it. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Our team is always all over coverage of everything related to the Pope, obviously the Holy Father, between the events. And of course, our crack news team, as you know better than I, on the ground in Rome, our Rome office, mm-hmm. and of course, our Washington crew as well, carry it. And of course, all of the more spiritual aspects of these events and stuff are also covered in many ways through our other great live show programs. Like Life on the Rock today has got a special program where Father Mark did an interview with Mark Bartek. He's a senior director of Focus, and they were talking about the Focus missionary, you know, the servant of God, Michelle Dupont. Mm-hmm. I hope I pronounced her last name correctly. But so, again, the spirit, those other spiritual aspects. And then, of course, tomorrow on Saturday, we do have the audience with Pope Leo XIV, with the officials of the Roman Curia and the employees of the Holy See. So that's airing live at 4 a.m. Of course, we'll encore it for the rest of us at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. So you can check that out. We've also got a special on the Marion Hill Missionary Fathers and Brothers that was once a Trappist community, became independent, has expanded worldwide, especially in, interesting in South Africa. A lot of news about South Africa. That's airing on Saturday at 2 p.m. And then we roll into Sunday, a special program, Contemplation, with the great, the famous Father Dubé, one of the great spiritual directors of all time, who unfortunately has passed on. You can look for that at 6 p.m. And then Catholics Come Home, Paul Darrow, people might know that name, dealing with different issues, homosexuality in the fashion industry. That will be featured on Catholics Come Home. We've also got a special on St. Elizabeth Hesselblad, Catholic convert who founded a new branch of the Brigantines with convents worldwide, became the first Swedish saint. So you can look for that. That's a special as well, 10 p.m. on Sunday. And then, of course, it is Memorial Day weekend, and EW10 is always honoring the veterans and those who have passed on. And, of course, the Archdiocese for the Military Services, we have a close working relationship with. Their Memorial Mass will be airing on Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time from the Basilica of the National Shrine of Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. Next week, we've got some new episodes of Women of Grace with Father Hugh Gillespie, and also a program next Wednesday on St. Mariana of Jesus, 8 p.m. special Wednesday night. So people can check that out as well.
Wow.
Check out EWTN.com for all things happening on EWTN. And don't forget our ever-expanding on-demand platform and, of course, our YouTube channel. Don't forget, folks, you can check out, go to those apps, the EWTN app on your smart TV, and all of that programming is there. So if you don't have that cable anymore, but you've got high-speed internet and you've got a smart TV, well, talk to that smart TV. It's got EWTN on it, and check that out.
How does your team decide, because there's so much going on, looking at the schedule with all the masses and all the feast days, and not only in Europe, of course, in Rome, but so many things going on around the world. It has to take a daily review and, as we say, editorial meeting with the staff to figure out where we're going to be. Because even though we are everywhere and we cover a lot, it's physically impossible to be in every place, but we do a pretty good job of getting most of the big stuff covered. But how is that handled for our listeners in case they...
Well, certainly on the programming side, Peter Gangan is the VP of programming. They have meetings on a monthly basis, obviously, that are talking months ahead. And as things mm-hmm. get closer and tighter, so many of these schedules are done 6 months ahead as a basic layout. And then as events shift, internally, some of that is moved around. And certainly Michael Elson, who is in charge of our scheduling department, his team basically, especially during the papal events when the schedule is totally fluid, they have to constantly be updating. And Patrick Campbell and his team in the TOC have to constantly be updating their airing mm-hmm. schedule. So there was a lot going on during there, and it is a long-range planning process with a constant review, as you're indicating, on a regular weekly, if not daily basis of how things are changing and evolving so we can carry the most important events of the church.
And then, of course, you have breaking news like the death of Pope Francis and then the election right. of the new pope. That just throws everything out the window, and then you start all over again, right?
Absolutely. But that's why we've developed that news response that we do have between News Nightly and In Depth, and, of course, our Pro-Life Weekly, and, of course, the long-standing World Over program, mm-hmm. along with the fact that we have a large presence on the ground in Rome. So nobody can better cover what's happening from the heart of the church, in the sense of Vatican City, than EW10 can, in multiple
speaking
languages.
Speaking of Rome, last night Dr. Bunsen had his book launch, and I couldn't make it down there, but my friend Gail went, and she said it was wonderful, and it was a full house. It was standing room only. So this is pretty exciting, because his book, Portrait of the Pope, is out now, and I believe it's available both on the catalog, the religious catalog, and also on Amazon. But he wrote that so quickly. God bless him. I mean, he worked so hard on it, but that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. He's a machine when it comes to writing and, let alone an encyclopedia. But it's funny. I always think of him because the first time I ever met him was back in 1997, interviewing him at OSV about one of his books. I think it was a Encyclopedia of Catholicism or something like that. And that's the first time we actually met. So I've known him for almost 30 years. And he's amazingly prolific, has the ability to express complex ideas in understandable ways, and has all of the historical background to just about everything that happens in the church.
Yeah, so we're excited for him. And I wanted to mention that I have a meeting with our wonderful Mission Advancement team after I get off the air today about my new Saints in Italy series based on our EWTN book, Italy Shrines and Wonders. And I think they did. Speaking of the Rome Bureau, Anthony came up and shot that with me last week, did a beautiful job, and it's free. So I just want to encourage people to go to EWTN.com, Saints in Italy. That's a whole new area, too, Doug, with doing these different learn series that are free for people.
Right, absolutely. And again, EW10 has always been, at its core, a devotional catechetical channel. And our job is to teach people what the church actually teaches, not what the New York Times thinks the church teaches, or America Magazine thinks, or the National Catholic Reporter even thinks. And that's why people can go to us as a touchstone and enrich themselves in an understanding of their faith, which is what all of our programming is designed to do. You know, we heavy accents, accent certainly in my mind has always been the saints, because it's one of the great differentiations of Catholicism, that connection, that ongoing 2,000 years, mm-hmm. the living church. You know, people aren't, it's not a dead church that happens every, you know, it's a living church that's been living from the beginning. And we have all these brothers and sisters in the faith that we can reach out to, who struggled in their lives, as you know, from the stories you can tell, etc. And the things we all like to think, you know, everybody was walking around 3 inches off the ground, you know, just
elevating all the time. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just magically with, you know, what do you say, butter would melt in their mouth or whatever, you know, kind of a thing. It's just kind of like, oh, this person's just so perfect. And it's not that way at all. It's totally opposite. These people had to struggle the most in many cases. And as they became more and more holy, they had more and more issues to deal with, because they get attacked. And yeah, those kinds of programs. I saw the e-blast that went out about that. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice picture of you, I have to say.
Thank you.
And there. So people should definitely check that out. And EW10 is trying to reach out to people in every which way it's possible, that people take in information, you know, on the internet, on your phone, whatever it happens to be, on satellite, Sirius, you know, on regular radio, streaming. You know, through an Alexa app, whatever.
Yeah, and that's why it's so great also to give that to the people free. They can use it as their own private study or a group study or a pilgrimage, and they can simply go to EWTN.com/saintsinitaly. And for all the other information of the great coverage of various events that Doug shared with us, go to EWTN.com. It is a Friday morning. Thank you, Doug. Always great to catch up with you. Doug Keck is our president and chief operating officer and joins us on Fridays for the Inside Word. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk Fact Check Friday. Stay tuned. Your Friday is going well. It's May 23rd, 2025, entering into Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of summer. But don't forget the main importance of the upcoming holiday. Of course, we have our parades and our barbecues and our family get-togethers, but it's to remember those who lost their lives, gave the ultimate sacrifice for defending our country. And I'll be talking a lot about that on Monday's show. We have a special program for you for Memorial Day on Monday. All right, Fact Check Friday this morning. There is a new study that's out from our friends at the Media Research Center, their News Busters program, where they take a look, obviously, at the news in general. They do all kinds of looks at broadcasting, cable, print. It's mainly news. Now, the whole Media Research Center looks overall at media, including social media, including television, including sexual content. But News Busters focuses more on the news media. And I was chatting about this with Tom Price at EW10 this morning before we went on the air. And he and I have been in this business a long time. And it's gotten to the point where we don't even recognize it anymore. It's just so sad. And even with all the evidence that's out there, all the evidence about the obvious cognitive decline of our former president, Joe Biden, and the news about his cancer in the advanced stages, and the fact that the media are making money off of books, making statements that they didn't know, and if they did know, they didn't know enough because the Democrats wouldn't talk to them, and the White House was circling the wagons, and the family was circling the wagons. It's just amazing to me that they can still call themselves journalists and admit to this. And some of them aren't even admitting it. And if they are admitting it, they're admitting it to such a small level. It's just really ridiculous. And so that's why the headline on this study caught my attention. Covering up the cover-up, ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS spend only 7 minutes on Biden decline bombshells. And these are bombshells. This is an historic story. This story is bigger than Watergate. The fact that the American people were lied to. It was fraud. It was a major cover-up about our previous president. We still don't know who knew what when specifically, who was running the country, how much the media know at the time, because again, they're still claiming to know only little amounts here and there and really going to all kinds of lengths to make it sound like it just wasn't their fault. All right, earlier this week, CNN anchor Jake Tapper's new book, Original Sin, President Biden's Decline, Its Cover-Up and His Disastrous Choice to Run Again, officially came out. And you can find, by the way, this story at newsbusters.org. Prior to its release, bombshells were dropped about how Joe Biden didn't recognize longtime associates, even actor George Clooney. So how much time did the broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS, devote to the recitation of Biden's shortcomings, long known by conservatives but suppressed by Jake Tapper and his press colleagues? Analysts with MRC and Newsbusters looked at ABC, CBS, and NBC's evening and morning news programs, as well as PBS's NewsHour from May 13th through the morning of May 19th, and found they spent a grand total of 7 minutes and 16 seconds on the reporting from Tapper and his co-author, Alex Thompson. Most of that coverage, 6 minutes and 17 seconds, was aired on NBC. ABC only spent 37 seconds on the topic. CBS offering just 22 seconds on the Tapper book disclosures. PBS's NewsHour did nothing on the Tapper-Thompson book. The broadcast networks sweeping it all under the rug, just as they hid Biden's decline before he dropped out of the 2024 race. The networks have covered up their own cover-up. Sunday's news, a report goes on, that Biden had been diagnosed with prostate cancer was appropriately treated as sad, but it also allowed the likes of NBC's Christian Welker to brush off any further talk of Biden's decline. On May 18th, NBC Nightly News, she noted, "This was already a challenging time for former President Biden and his family. A new book is set to come out in a matter of days that argues that the president's inner circle tried to conceal the state of his mental decline." Then she pivoted. The question moving forward, will the tone shift? Will they shift that conversation? On May 14th, the edition of NBC's Today Show, a co-host teased a Gabe Gutierrez segment saying the book was all the talk of Washington. For now, not much of that talk was actually aired on the broadcast network evening and morning shows. Now, while the Sunday roundtable shows were outside the study parameter, it should be noted that there was discussion, the report says, of Tapper and Thompson's book on the May 19th editions of ABC's This Week and NBC's Meet the Press. On the May 18th edition of CBS's Face the Nation, there was no mention of the Tapper-Thompson book, but there was some discussion on Axios's release of special counsel Robert Herr's interview with Biden. There was also a brief mention of the Axios story on the May 17th edition of NBC's Today Show that did not report on the Tapper-Thompson book disclosures. Again, this is the media covering up their own cover-up. Now, it was their cover-up as well as a cover-up on the part of the White House, on the part of many members of Congress, obviously, who were close to the president, and on the part of the inner circle in the family. So many people, so many levels knew. And what did they do to the American people or anyone in the media that questioned, which were few and far between, by the way? It was gaslighting. It was, you don't know what you're talking about. You have no right to diagnose the president of the United States, and on and on and on. And I even saw a report from Joe Scarborough, who was the one who was bragging last year about how the president was just a former president, then president. Joe Biden was just amazing. The best Biden ever. He says, well, I guess I was obviously wrong. But you should see the pretzel he twisted himself in before he was willing to admit that he was wrong. He sounded like Fonzie. Those of us old enough to remember Happy Days when Fonzie had to admit he was wrong. I was wrong. You remember that? He said, Biden, this version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. And then he went on to say, am I going to look at a clip of a stumbling Biden that's gone viral and pay more attention to that than 2.5-3 hours I have with the guy one-on-one going around the world? No, I'm just not going to. But then he eventually admitted that he was wrong. Again, this is a bigger cover-up than Watergate, in my journalistic opinion. Not only is it a big cover-up again from the White House last year, but it's a cover-up of the media. Something has got to give. There has to be an investigation of both the media and who knew what when in the government. This was fraud. We all saw it, we all could feel it, and we felt bad for the guy, even though I didn't agree with his politics and didn't vote for him. He shouldn't have been put in that position. And now, after the election is all over, they try to make money on it, or they try to cover up the cover-up. That's our Fact Check Friday for a Friday morning, May 23rd, 2025. Here's something to look at over the weekend if you get a chance. The use of social communications media. Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraphs 2493 through 2499. That's what media is supposed to be. The church sums it up nicely. Good little thing to read over the weekend. We'll be right back. Entering into the Memorial Day weekend, and you heard the story about how travel is going to be record-breaking, both driving and flying. And if you're looking for something beautiful to do, why not visit one of our beautiful Marian shrines around the country, including a place that we've taken groups to, and that is Our Lady of Champion. It is absolutely amazing. On the phone with us is Father Tony Stevens, a rector at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin. Father, great to talk with you, and this is a relatively new role for you, correct?
It is. It is. Yes. I've been here since September, and I've been very happy here serving the pilgrims at the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion.
And so let's talk about this, first of all, in terms of, we know we have we had a very Marian previously, a pope who was very Marian as well, Pope Francis, and now we have another pope who's very Marian, and we were talking during the break about some of the Marian shrines he's already visited, being a U.S. citizen as well, an American pope. But what is it about Marian shrines that are so important, do you think?
Ah, yes. I mean, Mary's the mother of Jesus, and she wants to lead us to her son. And I think if there is, sometimes God, Jesus, for some people, they seem a little distant. But I think there is a desire to be close to our mother, hopefully. And Mary just, she wants to lead us to her son. And so these Marian shrines, and there are many around the country, three here in Wisconsin in particular, at Our Lady of Guadalupe at La Crosse, Holy Hill, and then the Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, and just places of prayer and family. These are some things that I've seen in the months that I've been here. So, yeah.
In terms of numbers, well, how many people do you have each year that come on pilgrimage, whether in groups or individual pilgrimages?
We crested 200,000 pilgrims last year here at the at Champion, and we're on pace to do that again this year. And with the weather warming up, although we've had a little cool snap here recently, but we've had a lot of pilgrims here. First weekend of May, we had 7,300 walkers at the Walk to Mary, and that's the first weekend of May every year, and so that continues to grow as well. So the number of pilgrims continues to grow, and people who want to come and just pray, and they're amazed to hear about a Marian apparition that's been approved in the United States of America. It's the only
because
one.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That was my next question to you. The Marian shrines are always a great place to visit, but yours there, Our Lady of Champion, is the only first and only approved Marian apparition site in the U.S.
In the USA, that is correct. It was approved by Bishop Ricken, who is the ordinary of the diocese, in 2010. And then my religious community, the Fathers of Mercy, were asked to staff the shrine in 2011. And so we've had two or three priests here the whole time since 2011.
So tell us about the seer, Adele Bryce. Who was she and what do we know about her?
Yes. Adele was a 28-year-old Belgian immigrant woman, had emigrated to the United States in the 1850s, or early 1850s, and they were farmers, very poor. It was very rustic here still in this part of Wisconsin. And when Our Lady appeared to her three different times, and it was on the third occasion that Our Lady spoke to Adele and told her and instructed her to go and to, well, first she said, you know, it is good that you received the Eucharist today. You've been going to confession, but you need to do more. Because Adele had actually, before she came to the United States, had discerned a vocation to religious life, but out of obedience to her parents and also some spiritual direction from a pastor, came to the United States. And so she had to, she didn't put her vocation on hold per se, but she listened to the voice of obedience and Our Lady instructed her to go and catechize children. And so she quit working with her family so much, and she immediately went out to different farms in the area and for about 6 years worked around the Door County area catechizing the children because there were not many churches in the area, and catechesis was virtually non-existent. So then Adele established a school and for over 30 years taught the faith here at this spot where Our Lady had appeared to her.
Yeah, it's just amazing what Our Lady said to her. Gather the children. I'm looking at your website, which is beautiful, by the way, championshrine.org. Gather the children in this wild country and teach them what they should know for salvation. But how shall I teach them who know so little myself, she said. Teach them, replied her radiant visitor, their catechism, how to sign themselves at the sign of the cross and how to approach the sacraments. That is what I wish you to do. Go and fear nothing. I will help you. That is just so powerful. Could you imagine what she's thinking? I mean, you want me to do this? And Blessed Mother's like, don't worry, I'm here. I'm going to help you. But just that exchange is just incredibly powerful.
Well, and Adele was, she couldn't read or write herself. And she was blind in one eye. I mean, it's just tremendous what Our Lady did with someone who physically, by the world's metrics, really didn't have a lot going for her. And she worked faithfully and zealously for over 30 years to teach and to, and there were a lot of ups and downs just physically with the environment, you know, the cold winters and people who spiritually, you know, really oppressed her at different times, just a woman of tremendous faith. And so we've actually begun working on her process for canonization. And that was approved by Bishop Rick, and he presented that to the Council of Bishops last June, and all of the bishops unanimously voted to promote Adele's cause to take that first step to promote her as servant of God. And so we're working on that process right now because she was a very holy woman.
Talking with Father Tony Stevens, rector at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin, the website championshrine.org, something to really take under this task of doing a beautiful pilgrimage and going to these different shrines, especially Our Lady of Champion, which is the only approved Marian apparition, the shrine that has a Marian apparition that's been approved by the church. So, Father, when you come on a pilgrimage, and I told you that I've been there, we took a group there right after COVID a couple of years ago, and it was just amazing. It's just so beautiful. What do you do with the pilgrims in terms of what do they see when they come to the shrine?
Yes, they're going to be able to go into the main chapel, where we have Mass every day and confession every day. So, again, trying to emphasize that sacramental piece that Our Lady asked Adele to teach people about the sacraments. We try to provide that for the pilgrims. But then the apparition oratory, which is below the sanctuary of the chapel, where people can go down and pray in front of a statue of Our Lady, and there's hundreds of candles down there, and they can light a candle, and they can pray for their personal intentions. And I feel blessed because I go down there every night and say a prayer for all the pilgrims and their candles that they've lit that day. But every night there's a new row of candles, I mean rows and rows, that have been lit. And then pilgrims can walk the grounds. And part of this story, too, is the miracle of the fire in 1871.
That was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll try to give the Reader's Digest version, but there was a terrible fire in 1871, and people had no place to go. So they came to the spot where Our Lady had appeared in 1859, and Adele led them in prayers. They prayed the rosary, and they basically walked in a big circle just on the little grounds where they had a fenced off area put up, and the fire burned up to the edge of the fence. But they're praying the rosary, and Our Lady protected them from the fire because everything was, if there was a terrible drought, and the next morning the rains fell and put the rest of the fires out. So we have an area on the grounds that commemorates that area where Adele and the refugees walked while they prayed for protection from the fire. So they can pray on the grounds because we have very beautiful grounds. And it's very simple. It's here in Derry country outside of mm-hmm. Green Bay. And so it's really a beautiful spot to visit.
Isn't there, if my memory serves me correctly, a spot where you can still see where the fire touched the area of the shrine?
There, well,
like
we
something on the fence, do, isn't there? If I remember,
yes, there was. We do in the history center. We actually have one of the old fence posts,
right?
And so it is where the fire had burned up to the edge of the. Yes, exactly, up to the perimeter of the sanctuary. Yes.
So, what's it like for you to be there? You mentioned that as a priest, you get to go down and go in the chapel and pray, and you know you're responsible for taking care of this beautiful shrine. To be at a place where you know Our Lady appeared. This is approved. This is a church saying this happened. Does that, I mean, you can never, ever, I imagine, take that for granted, even though you're there every day.
That is one of the dangers. And so I pinch myself mm-hmm. because it's a real gift to be here. And just, you know, even as I preach, you know, I try to remind pilgrims of that. And, you know, I have to pray against that tendency, because of the old tendency, familiarity can breed contempt, and you don't ever want to take this for granted. And so too, what helps me with that too, though, is it's a different group of pilgrims every day, and they're excited to be here. And it's very evident that they are coming with their petitions. They love Our Lady. And there's some people who aren't sure why they're here. And so, but someone or something has drawn them here, mm-hmm. and it's edifying because you end up in conversation with them, and it's beautiful to hear people's stories as to what drew them here. But ultimately, it's Our Lady, and she wants to lead them to Jesus.
Amen, yeah. Amen. And are there any, before we have about 2 minutes left, any special events, Father, coming up this summer that you'd like to discuss? I know we can send people to your website at championshrine.org. Would you have anything coming up that you'd like to share before we let you go?
Yes, since it is a Jubilee Year of Hope pilgrimage site where you can come to visit as here in the Diocese of Green Bay, and for all the pilgrims can receive a plenary indulgence coming here for the Jubilee Year, we have a Jubilee Pilgrim Mass on July the 20th at 11 a.m. with Bishop David Ricken.
Oh, wonderful.
And then Mass for the Assumption of Our Lady on August 15th. At 11 a.m., and then a little farther into the fall is the Solemnity of Our Lady of Champion on October the 9th.
That
so
would be
those
a beautiful
would be three
time.
Big events.
Yeah, because you're
yes.
in the, I mean, all of them be great, but the fall in that part of the country, because, of course, you're not too far from where I'm from, Michigan, so
yeah.
the fall is
yeah.
such a beautiful time. And that's where when we did it, it was in October, and it was actually a pretty warm, considering it was, you know, the northern part of Michigan. We drove all the uh-huh. way through and went over through the UP and then down into Wisconsin, but the colors were just spectacular. And then showing up there at the shrine in October was just phenomenal. Father, thank you so much, and pray for us at EWTN and all of our listeners this Memorial Day weekend. And really, folks, do yourself a favor, and this summer, because now we're in the unofficial start of summer, this Memorial Day weekend, get to one of the Marian shrines, but especially consider Our Lady of Champion, because, as Father said, it is the only approved apparition, okay? The only approved Marian apparition site in the United States of America. So what a great thing to do during the Jubilee year. Father, thank you so much.
Thank you, Teresa. God bless you all and all your listeners.
You too, and have a beautiful weekend. And again, I encourage people to check out the website for Our Lady of Champion, championshrine.org. And another reminder of what our Blessed Mother said to Adele. Gather the children in this wild country and teach them what they need to know for their salvation. Now, Our Lady was talking about the wild country in Wisconsin, but I think we can apply that phrase wild country to what we see in our world today. It's crazy out there in terms of the culture, and what a beautiful message from Our Lady, the mysterious woman in white speaking to Adele Bryce. Gather the children in this wild country and teach them what they need to know for their salvation. Again, the website, championshrine.org. It is a Friday morning. It's almost 53 minutes past the hour. It's May 23rd, entering into the Memorial Day weekend. Here with you on EWTN, we will be right back to let you know what's coming up on the second hour on EWTN Radio Extra and, of course, the app. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Friday. It's May 23rd, 2025. Thanks for tuning in to the second hour of EWTN's Catholic Connection through our EWTN app or our Radio Extra channel. All the info, of course, can be found at EWTN.com. And also want to remind you that in the first hour of the program, we did interview, as we do every Friday, our President and Chief Operating Officer, Doug Keck, who filled us in on, oh my goodness, all the amazing events we're going to be covering for you in the next couple of weeks, but especially this week alone. We are going to be moving in next week and into the month of June. And if you heard my story yesterday about the Pope's schedule for June, wow. He is going to be celebrating Mass every weekend on Sunday, and there will be an event tied to it, in addition, of course, to the most important event, the celebration of the Holy Mass, the praying of the Mass. But there is also a special event. Let's say there is a Jubilee event tied to it, or there is a special feast day, such as Corpus Christi or the Feast of the Sacred Heart. But EWTN is going to be there, so it's so exciting to see the full schedule of our new Pope. It's just incredible. I mean, you think Pope Francis was busy, may he rest in peace, but this Pope is taking on an awful lot. Now, he's a lot younger. He's not even 70 yet. He's 69. So we're seeing exciting things already. Just a reminder to go to EWTN.com to check it out if you missed the first part of the program, because we have some special events also coming up this weekend, going into Memorial Day, because we're covering some very special Memorial Day events in our nation's capital related to the Church. And again, you can find all the details on EWTN.com. Now, for this hour of Catholic Connection on a Friday, we have T's 2 cents. And I want to take a look at pilgrimage. You know, I just did an interview in the first hour, as you may have heard, with the head of the beautiful shrine, which is in Wisconsin. And if you've never been to Our Lady of Champion Shrine, I highly recommend it. But I just want to talk a little bit about pilgrimage. I just came off a pilgrimage shortened version because I didn't go for the whole trip, with my friends Steve and Janet Ray, and also a wonderful priest of the Diocese of Lansing, Michigan, Father James Conlon. And it just got me thinking about how important pilgrimages really are. And even if you can't go overseas, which is understandable for a lot of people, there are so many ways. And we'll talk about this again in detail on Monday as well. I've got more specifics. But I want to talk about visiting a Marian shrine and what it means to go on pilgrimage. And then I'll also remind you of my Saints in Italy series, which is online. It's free through EWTN, through our Mission Advancement Program. They're doing these Learn series, and it's great because they're free, number one. And number two, you can do private prayer, you can do a group prayer. And in the case of Saints in Italy, it's like a mini pilgrimage because we take you all over central Italy in two main regions, Lazio and Umbria, and you're going to be introduced to the saints. And I also want to talk about a very, very special place that has a Eucharistic miracle. And the little pilgrimage Deacon Dom and I are going to be making tomorrow in light of that. First, though, and after that, wait. Speaking of pilgrimage, Visions of the Divine, an artistic journey into the mystery of the Eucharist. Stephen Auth will be joining us in the second part of the program. It's going to be great. This book is gorgeous. Weather-wise, the weather not so nice. Areas of severe thunderstorms and excessive rainfall through the weekend, according to the National Weather Service. We have severe thunderstorms expected across portions of the central into southern plains into Sunday. And they're saying still large hail and severe gusts are the main threats. The threat for heavy to excessive rainfall and possible flash flooding returning to the south central part of the country today. And that will continue, the National Weather Service says, possibly for the rest of the weekend. Right now, though, it is 4 minutes past the hour, and we need to check the news for you on a Friday here on EWTN. Mark Mayfield gives us an update on that horrible story in our nation's capital earlier this week. The suspect in that deadly shooting on Wednesday of two Israeli embassy staff members is now being formally charged.
Interim U.S. Attorney for the District of Washington, Janine Pirro, made the announcement.
Murder in the first degree for the murder of 30-year-old Yaron Levshinsky, a foreign official and official guest of the United States. Mr. Levshinsky was here on official business for the state of Israel.
Elias Rodriguez faces two counts of first-degree murder, along with murder of foreign officials and two firearm-related charges. Rodriguez was taken into custody following the shooting outside of the Capitol Jewish Museum. He's reported to have shouted "Free Palestine" while he was being arrested. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi says the death penalty for Rodriguez is a possibility. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Meanwhile, a candlelight vigil was held near the White House last night to honor the two embassy staffers from Israel killed in the shooting in Washington. Dozens of people lighting candles and singing in memory of 26-year-old Sarah Milgram and 30-year-old Yaron Levshinsky. The suspect, Elias Rodriguez, as you heard from Mark Mayfield, charged with first-degree murder and other counts. He was taken into custody following the shooting outside the Capitol Jewish Museum. And as you heard, he reportedly shouted "Free Palestine" while he was being arrested. Authorities are also investigating the case as a possible hate crime and terrorist attack. A bill banning Texas cities from using taxpayer money to fund out-of-state abortion travel is now on its way to Governor Greg Abbott's desk. The Texas House approving the measure on Thursday by an 87-58 vote, with two Democrats joining Republicans in supporting the measure. The Senate passing the bill last month, Austin City Council allocating $400,000 to pay for lodging and travel expenses to Texas residents who get abortions in other states. That new law would prohibit such an arrangement. And Catholic News Agency explains that Delaware Governor Matt Meyer this week signing a measure legalizing physician-assisted suicide for terminally ill adults with a prognosis of 6 months or less to live. The law, which goes into effect on January 1st, allows patients to self-administer lethal medication, making Delaware the 11th state to legalize euthanasia. So far, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington, along with the District of Columbia, also permit that practice. The Bishop of Wilmington has been urging Delaware residents to oppose that measure, saying in April, "There's a great distinction between, on the one hand, death that comes naturally, and on the other hand, performing actions to bring on death." The Supreme Court is blocking what would have been the nation's first publicly funded religious charter school. The case is out of Oklahoma, where there were plans for a Catholic virtual school. The state Supreme Court shot it down, saying it was unconstitutional. That was appealed to the nation's highest court, which was split at 4-4. What happens then? The lower court's ruling is upheld. The justices did not explain their vote, Justice Amy Coney Barrett recusing herself from the case, leading to that split decision. The ruling only applies to Oklahoma, meaning there is not a nationwide precedent to publicly fund religious charter schools. The U.S. and Iran are set to hold another round of nuclear talks. Reps from both nations meeting today in Rome with the U.S. contingent led by Middle East Special Envoy Steve Witkoff. The U.S. is calling for Iran to halt its uranium enrichment program, but the Islamic Republic has rejected those demands in the past. Tehran maintains its program is for civilian purposes. The White House saying yesterday the president believes a potential deal with Iran is moving along in the right direction. And the president of Peru, according to Catholic News Agency, along with the Minister of Foreign Trade and Tourism, officially launching a new tourism route for their country. The route is known as Paths of Pope Leo XIV, and it seeks to highlight the places where the Holy Father, formerly known, of course, as Bishop Robert Prevost, exercised his fruitful pastoral ministry. The route covering four of the country's regions, key locations in the ministry of the Holy Father, of course, the man who is now Pope Leo XIV. In addition to the churches and religious sites, that route will include other attractions such as museums, beaches, and nature reserves. Daniel Martindale tells us authorities in Southern California are announcing the arrest of 265 suspected child predators.
The so-called Operation Spring Cleaning, led by the Los Angeles Police Department, spanned Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. The suspects are accused of using the internet to exploit children. The arrests were made between April 6th and 19th, following undercover investigations across different social media platforms. The LAPD says some of the suspects were employed or placed in a role that gave them direct contact with children. I'm Daniel Martindale.
Harvard can no longer enroll foreign students. That's according to the Homeland Security Chief, Kristi Noem, who sent a letter to Harvard informing them their ability to enroll foreign students at their university has now been revoked. The letter stating the university has not fully complied with all reporting requirements to DHS, including providing detailed records of foreign students' misconduct on campus. And the pilot of a doomed plane asked air traffic control about weather reports, this before crashing into a San Diego neighborhood yesterday morning.
Six out there, a little better, but higher minimum, so probably not a great option either.
Six people are presumed dead after a private jet crashed. Authorities say the Cessna 550 had six people on board when it flew into a patch of dense fog. It clipped a power line and then crashed into a house early Thursday in North San Diego. Music agency Sound Talent Group saying three of its employees were killed in that crash, including the co-founder Dave Shapiro, former drummer for metalcore band The Devil Wears Prada, Daniel Williams, also on the plane. No one on the ground was killed, but about 100 residents had to be evacuated after the crash led to several house fires. Federal authorities are still investigating the cause of that crash. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says, "Make America Healthy Again." His report is a call to action for common sense.
It's common sense that not all calories are equal in nutritional value. It's common sense that over-medicating kids is dangerous.
He says it's a roadmap that federal agencies can use to reduce chronic childhood illnesses. At the top of that list, a poor diet, with an estimated 70% of U.S. children and their calories coming from ultra-processed foods. Other main points from the report include too many environmental chemicals in our food chain, a lack of activity and chronic stress, and an overprescription of medication for children. Kennedy says the U.S. must act decisively to reverse a childhood chronic disease crisis. And swim safety is at the top of mind as we head into this Memorial Day weekend. Miren Oka is with Miami-Dade's Drowning Prevention Coalition and says just because your children have taken swimming lessons does not mean they're water safe. So always designate a water watcher.
Because unfortunately, we hear, like, when there are a lot of adults watching the children by the water, no one is really 100% devoted to watching. Everybody thinks somebody else is really watching and paying attention.
She says you can think of safety in layers of protection, from lessons to pool fences and gate alarms. Nearly 100 people drowning in South Florida last year alone. And a Denver-based airline is again leading all U.S. carriers when it comes to consumer complaints. A report from the Colorado Public Interest Research Group says that Frontier Airlines had just over 23 complaints for every 100,000 passengers it served last year. Spirit Airlines finishing second in complaints with around 13 per 100,000 passengers. The report also noting complaints among U.S. airlines jumping 9% last year, while passenger numbers only increased by 4%. And AAA expecting a record number of people to travel for the Memorial Day holiday weekend. AAA's Robert Sinclair saying more than 45 million will go 50 miles or more from home, beating a 20-year-old record.
Surprising, given the economy and all that's going on. But I think the big X factor is gasoline prices, which are so much cheaper compared to a year ago, upwards of about 50 cents cheaper.
New York City is ranked the third most popular domestic destination for the weekend. Traffic in the area is forecasted, though, to be very bad this afternoon and evening. AAA projecting about 39.5 million people traveling by vehicle this holiday weekend. That's up more than a million compared to last year. We'll be right back on a Friday. Hope it's going well for you. It's May 23rd, and you're listening to EWTN Radio Extra. We'll be right back. Journey undertaken for a religious motive. If you do a quick Google search on the term pilgrimage, that's what it gives you. A pilgrimage is a journey undertaken for a religious motive. It is a practice observed in various religions around the world, including Islam, Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, and others. Pilgrims seeking a specific place that has been sanctified by association with a divinity or other holy personage. Throughout history, different cultures around the world have developed sacred journeys called pilgrimages, which are often long and at the end of, of a destination of a great spiritual or cultural significance. And you know what? We're in the middle of this kind of an opportunity right now because we are in the middle of a Jubilee year. And next year in Italy, here in Italy, there is going to be another major significant event that, according to the experts, and I'll dive into this on Monday in my special edition of our Memorial Day program with my friend and guide Luca Malietta. And I had forgotten all about this. Next year is the 800th anniversary of the death of St. Francis. And so it's a special year, not only for the church, but for Italy in general, because Francis, who is the patron of Italy, is also a very popular saint and person in Italy, much loved by so many people in addition to Catholics and other Christians. So there's going to be all kinds of activities here in Italy related to St. Francis of Assisi. And so think about a pilgrimage and think about for this year, the Jubilee year, we're almost kind of right in the middle of it because June is right around the corner, right? We have, what, 10 days left in the month of May? Think about the kind of pilgrimage you want to make. And as we mentioned earlier, one of those could be a pilgrimage to a Marian shrine. And I think it would be a beautiful thing, for example, if you're not too far from Wisconsin, to head over to, as we discussed, Our Lady of Champion in Wisconsin, the National Shrine there. It's so beautiful. It's pretty easy to get to. It's in the country, and it's just lovely. And you're not too far from Green Bay, so you can have a nice time and maybe go to Green Bay, stay there, have some nice meals, enjoy, you know, some nice accommodations, and then take a whole day or two to go to Our Lady of Champion. And as you heard Father say, there are all kinds of different events coming up in the summer related to Our Lady, and it would be a great thing to do. Now, I was going through the book Visions of the Divine that's written by our next guest, Stephen V. Auth, and it's published by our friends at Sophia and EWTN, and I just happened to turn to page 39. And page 39 has a beautiful image of the Orvieto Cathedral, which took 300 years to build. Yes, you heard me correctly, 300 years. And why am I telling you about this? Well, this is something special because now through Pentecost, the Eucharistic miracle that is housed in Orvieto, the Corpus Christi miracle, is available for veneration. And so speaking of pilgrimage, Deacon Dom and I, God willing, are going to make a mini pilgrimage tomorrow because, as you know, we're based in Italy almost half the year, and we're going to go about 45 minutes south of where we live in central Italy and visit the beautiful Etruscan town of Orvieto. We have seen the corporal before, and I'll explain that miracle to you in a minute. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but just kind of a review. But I really wanted to go without the responsibility of leading a group or having any assignment, just to go and just to venerate and just to pray. And what's so beautiful about these special shrines is that if you are going to pray, just as is with St. Peter's, you can go in a separate entrance. And oftentimes in these places, especially on a Saturday, which is a popular touring date, you have to wait hours and hours in line to get inside the church if you're going to do, or the site, if you're going to do a general tour. In Orvieto, at the Basilica, you can walk in on the side. There is a side entrance to the side chapel of the Eucharistic miracle. And this miracle occurred in Bolsena, which is actually in Lazio, in northern Lazio, where a priest, and there's a lot of stories associated with priests doubting the Eucharist, doubting the body and blood, the precious body and blood of our Lord, and what our Lord did for these priests. And the particular priest from Prague was actually, speaking of pilgrimage, on pilgrimage. And he stopped at Santa Cristina in Bolsena, which again is in northern Lazio, and it sits along Lago di Bolsena, which is a beautiful lake in that area. And there's a beautiful church there named after, obviously, St. Christina. And you can visit the altar below where this happened, by the way. And so he's celebrating Mass. And again, remember, this priest is having doubts about the real presence. And during the consecration, the Eucharist bleeds on the corporal. And of course, you can imagine what was going through the mind of that priest. So he took the evidence of that miracle, the corporal, wrapped it up carefully, and headed north, nearby, to southern Umbria, because the Pope was there at the time. And now, that Eucharistic miracle is housed in this beautiful shrine, this side chapel, in Orvieto. And this is what the Feast of Corpus Christi is based on. So tomorrow, Deacon Dom and I, God willing, are going to get up and we're going to head there and be able to venerate this. Now, it happens only a few times a year that you can venerate relics, these special relics. For example, in Orvieto, they do expose the corporal for veneration during Advent and the Christmas season. And so you get to see it until Epiphany, the Feast of the Epiphany. And then in the Easter season, you get to see it through the Feast of Pentecost. And then, of course, on the Day of Corpus Christi, which is in June, and which the Pope will be celebrating, of course, big time in Rome with a beautiful Mass, there is the most amazing procession that takes place in Orvieto, where people dress up in medieval costumes, and the bishop comes in, and there are many priests, and there are many deacons, and many other people. They do a beautiful procession through the town, and the streets of Orvieto are lined with different flower formations in honor of the Eucharist. And you have other beautiful places such as Spello, Italy, that do similar things in terms of a Eucharistic procession and beautiful images laid out in flower petals and seeds all over the town. But in Orvieto, it is all about the Eucharistic miracle. Just like in Wisconsin with Our Lady of Champion, where there was a miracle there, and it's an apparition, the only approved Marian apparition in the United States of America. So think about this summer, now that we're entering into this weekend, and again, we'll be talking in more detail about this on Monday. Think about where you would like to go. Yes, it's great to go to the beach. Yes, it's great to, I don't know, maybe go camping, whatever you like to do. But what can you do to go on pilgrimage? What is your definition of pilgrimage? According to AI, according to a definition, it means to undertake something, a journey for a religious motive. What is your religious motive right now? What are you hoping to gain from the slower, more take it easy summer months that are in front of us? Don't let them go by without doing something special. Do a pilgrimage, a short pilgrimage, maybe a longer pilgrimage. Take a day, take 2 days, take a little bit more time to give yourself some perspective, to slow down. And as I always say in Italian, learn la dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. It does wonders, not only for your mind, but most importantly, for your soul. And we're going to dive into this concept more deeply because you can take a pilgrimage with this brand new book from my friend Stephen F. Auth. And he also co-wrote it with his wife and someone familiar to our EWTN audience, Monsignor Roger Landry, who's been very involved in, of course, our papal coverage the last couple of weeks. And the foreword is written by the one, the only, Timothy Cardinal Dolan. The book is Visions of the Divine, An Artistic Journey into the Mystery of the Eucharist. And I just happened to open it to the page, as I mentioned, page 39, where it's all about Orvieto, Italy. that definitely should be a place on your bucket list. And one more shameless plug for our beautiful series that's now up and online, Saints in Italy. You can go to EWTN.com/Saints in Italy for more information. We'll dive into this beautiful book, Visions of the Divine, when we come back on a Friday. Stay tuned. Well, I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to Stephen Auth again. We actually just hit it off with his first books that came out and actually met in Rome. And he and his beautiful wife, Evelyn, and Deacon Dom and I had a wonderful glass of Prosecco together in the bar of the Michelangelo Hotel around the corner from the Vatican.
Yeah.
And I was talking to the Deacon. Remember that? I remember that was
yeah,
so
I do.
Nice.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So great to talk to you. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for this beautiful book. I just love it. And, you know, I have a book that's similar. I mean, your format is much different. And I love it how you're walking through the mass with the art. But I love the fact that you are, we're both of us are trying to do, I think, the same thing, is to see God through art. And I'm telling you, I just think, Stephen, this is so important. Thanks for joining us. And thanks for doing this book. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, Teresa, you know, for hundreds of years, the church used sacred art to help the laity and the clergy enter into the mystery of the Eucharist. And what happened, I think, around the time of the Reformation was that the art got separated from the churches, basically. A lot of it was destroyed or burned, and a lot of it ended up in museums. And you know, there's still in Italy quite a bit in churches, but elsewhere it's mostly in museums, and a lot of the churches almost become museums. So what we wanted to do, you know, the theologians took over explaining the Eucharist to each other with these great books, and the art historians took over explaining the art to each other, but they don't ever mention God in all their little articles. And so what Evelyn wanted to do and I was to try to bring the art of the Mass back inside the Mass itself.
Mm.
And we embarked on this pilgrimage around the world looking for the art of the Mass and recurating it inside the Mass. And it really is, I don't know, I think it's just the reaction of this book has been very profound. It's really helping people, including clergy, by the way, who are telling me, you know, it's going to change the way they celebrate the Mass even. You know, the images and the reflections. Every single prayer in the Mass, we have a piece of art for that we think really helps enter into that particular prayer.
Yeah,
and then
that's what
Yeah,
that's what I think is so different about this is the format. So kind of walk us through, as you mentioned, basically you're journeying into the mysteries of the Mass through fine art, but kind of walk us through how we should use this book. And I know you have a chapter on that in here, but kind of help us with this because it's so unique, Stephen.
Well, it can be used in different ways, and I described that in the introduction, Teresa. I really talked about how I'm using the book, but you know, one way is just as a visual prayer book for attending the Mass. I mean, you can even literally, it's in the form of a guidebook, similar in that sense to the way your book is formatted. You can you know, go to the Mass with it, or at least keep the images in your mind. And because the book is organized by prayer and in the order of the Mass, I use it to, on certain points in the Mass, or I'm sort of getting stuck, or sometimes my mind is wandering, I can pull back in my mind those images and reflect on those, and it helps me enter into that mystery. So at one level, and that's probably the most important level, people can use it for that. It also, in a way, can be a guidebook. What people have been using it for is as a kind of spiritual guidebook to the art of different cities. There's an appendix at the back called Appendix B that reorganizes the 100-some-odd images in Visions of the Divine. It reorganizes it by city. And through the course of producing Visions, Evelyn and I visited 20 different cities to find this art. And then you can you know, look up the art by Steve. You're going to Florence. There's 16, 17 images from Florence there. And a lot of them are famous. Some are, you know, most people don't even know about. But it kind of organizes an art tour of Florence, specifically around the Mass, which is a really unique way to approach a city like Florence, I think.
Yeah, I was just in Florence over the weekend. I met up with Steve and Janet Ray for part of their Saints and Shrines pilgrimage. So this is really fresh in my mind. And then now living here in Italy and being able to access, I never get tired of it. And I never cease to be overwhelmed by these places and by the artists. And this is such a beautiful book. I mean, it's very informative. But it's very down to earth, too. It's not too heady where, oh, I'm not going to understand, you know, the artist or what the artist meant. So that's what I really, really like about it. So 20 different cities. Now, in terms of the book itself, did you purposely say, okay, we're going to go to 20 different cities in a certain amount of time for the research? Or I know you and Evelyn travel so much. Was it kind of a combination of you were already traveling and you added the research in? Or did you come up with a plan specifically for travel for the book?
So it was... You know, we've been traveling to Europe, as you know, in reference for years. And some of these paintings have been with me. I mean, the book, the painting that opens the book, which is at the Louvre, Rembrandt's Supper of Emmaus, I've been studying that painting for 50 years every time I go to the Louvre. So a bunch of the images we had already been to many times. Others were either new to us or ones that we really wanted to refocus on from the perspective of the Mass itself. And so... Really, whether we'd been to it many times before or maybe for the first time, we found ourselves going to every one of these cities. And, you know, about 3 years ago, I was asked in my day job to help out with the London office. So I kind of bi-located now between London and New York. And while that seemed like a challenge... vis-a-vis our other evangelical projects, it ended up being a blessing because we then found ourselves in London and could, you know, make, as you know, very easy weekend trips all over Europe to see all these places. So, yeah, it was a combination, but there was a plan, and it was fairly deliberate, frankly.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite country or a favorite city? I mean, there's so many cities, as you said, 20 different cities. Is there a favorite that you say, okay, this is a place where I could just, you know, recommend that you could be here and you could, I mean, this is the place for you and Evelyn. What is it? Do you think there's one or are there several?
I think there's several, but we're very at home in Rome. I mean, that's the city in Europe that we've been to the most, probably other than London. And, we just feel very at home there. Love Florence, love Madrid, enjoy Paris. I don't know. Even these little towns, you know, some of these places we went to for one painting, and everyone would go, Steve, where are we going now? I go, sweetie, we got to go to Glasgow. We got to see the Christ of St. John of the Cross, you know? Or Strasbourg, we went for one painting. Vienna, we went for one painting. There's places like that. And we tried to enjoy the city while we're there, but really the purpose was to see one painting. The Fall of the Rebel Angels at the Kunstmuseum in Vienna, I always had thought of as a little postage stamp painting because it's on the back of so many prayer cards, a painting by Giordano, an Italian, by the way. And but no, I mean, it is, I don't know if you've seen it, Teresa, at the museum there in Vienna, but it is just, you know, 15 feet high, and the battle of light and darkness really comes alive as you stand before a painting like that.
Yeah, Vienna's on my bucket list. I've been to Austria, but not to Vienna. Been to Salzburg. There's so many places that I want to see, and then I want to go back to over and over again, especially in Rome. And there's a special Caravaggio exhibit going on in Rome, so Deacon Dom are going to be and I are going to be going down there in June. Visions of the Divine, an artistic journey into the mystery of the Eucharist by Stephen Auth. You can get it from, of course, our EWTM religious catalog and Amazon. It's published by our friends at Sophia. What a beautiful book, and what a way to dive more deeply into the Mass. More with Stephen when we come back on a Friday morning. It's a great pilgrimage book. Thirty-nine minutes past the hour. Of course, we are into just about the Memorial Day weekend. Many people are on their way to a vacation, maybe to see relatives and big events coming up on Monday for the Memorial Day holiday. But I was talking in our 2 cents segment about the importance of pilgrimage, that when you're taking a break this summer, as most people take vacations over the summer, especially if they have young children because the kids are in school and being in summer, they're out of school, to think about doing a pilgrimage, and especially to think about including what Stephen talks about in his book, Visions of the Divine. That's the actual title of the book from Sophia Press, Visions of the Divine, An Artistic Journey into the Mystery of the Eucharist. And the foreword is written by Timothy Cardinal Dolan, of course, the Archbishop of New York. I love the foreword. I love Timothy Dolan. I just think he's one of our best leaders in the Catholic Church.
So super. I was with him last night in New York.
He's phenomenal, and he's funny. He's down to earth. But I love the fact that you're walking us through each part of the Mass. So how did you get the idea? Because, I mean, you've done a lot in the past with evangelization, but this is very specifically, I think, more Catholic than anything you've done, Stephen, because of the visuals here that remind us of the parts of the Mass. How did you come to do this? What was your idea? How did it come to you?
So, first of all, I think it was God's idea, Teresa, honestly, but what happened was, when we did the Pilgrimage to the Museum, which was our second book, it's about man's search for God through art and time, and you see the ups and downs of how we get closer to God and pull away from him over 5,000 years of art. What we began to ponder on is the moments where man seemed to come closest to God was often through art, was often in Eucharistic art. And then other sort of things happened, calm pings, God moments, that kept coming back in my mind to this idea of how the Lord used meals to draw people closer to him, how the Mass plays such an important role in that. These art images that we had found in pilgrimage, it just led to this breakthrough that why don't we do a book based on the Mass itself? And it's almost so blindingly obvious. It's amazing that no one's had done that before. It really is, as you say, I mean, it's just a very beautiful journey into the Mass using art. And it also has helped understand the art. I'm thinking about an image that you may know, Teresa. It's at San Felicita in Florence, which is not exactly on the beaten track. But it's a small church across from the Ponte Vecchio. And an artist, a Catholic artist, Donnie McMahon, has put me onto this image. And we went over there to see it one day. We've been visiting it many times since. And it really kind of exemplifies what happens when you try to do a book this way. So this image by Pontormo, it's painted in 1527, near the end of the Renaissance. And Pontormo is starting a new style of art called Mannerism, where a lot of the rules of idealism of the Renaissance are being thrown out. And this painting was panned at the time for a lot of different reasons, but one was these spectacular colors, and in particular, the fact that the painting sort of comes apart at the center, as opposed to, as you know, with Renaissance art, everything is designed to focus at the center. Mm-hmm. And people were very disturbed by this void at the center. As Mary, it's a Pietà. Mary is releasing Jesus onto the back of John. And she's in agony over this. And she's sort of falling backwards into the arms of Mary Magdalene. And Jesus is floating across the center of the canvas down onto the back of John. And in the center is nothing. It's a void, which is very unusual from a Renaissance perspective. So we go visit this painting, and it's just mind-blowing in terms of what it does to your mind as you look at it. But when you see it in the context, the painting is sitting right above the altar of the chapel. So what's being communicated there is that Jesus is being deposited, the holy, and we use it for the moment in the Mass, the holy and living sacrifice, right after the words of institution. And Jesus is being deposited literally onto the altar as the holy and living sacrifice, being released by his mother over the back of John, the church, onto the altar. And when we get there, and you know, the third or fourth time we visited, I said to Evelyn, I said, sweetie, why don't we kneel down at the altar here and say a prayer? And as we kneel down, I look up and I realize what fills the void. It's the Eucharist. As you can imagine, at this little altar, as the priest raises the Eucharist and says, behold the Lamb of God, which is almost the next prayer, the Eucharist is on the angle of your eye kneeling down to the void. The Eucharist fills the void. That's the that's the whole point.
Wow. Wow. It is so incredible when you sit and you take the time to look, and as opposed to just rushing through one church to the next church. And it never ceases to amaze me how many times when I come back to a particular place and look at another piece of art, how I see something, maybe seeing it differently, or seeing something new, something for the very first time, even though I've been there 5, 10, 15 times. Do you have that experience?
Oh, absolutely. It's the more you look at a piece of art, the more things come to you that you don't see on the first pass. I think one of our mutual friends is Liz Lev, right?
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've been with Liz at the Sistine ceiling.
Oh,
we have many,
many
images
times.
Of the
many
Sistine.
Times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always say to her, Liz, you have to write a book about this. Because she has taken so many people through the Sistine, she sees things in that ceiling that no one else sees.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, she has a gift. I think you have a gift. I certainly have a gift of seeing, if you will. But you got to be there to see it. And the more you meditate on it in prayer, and I think that's an important point, when you meditate on it in prayer, you see things in a prayerful way that maybe a scientific art historian might not see, mm-hmm. like what fills the void in Pontormo's deposition from the cross.
Yeah, that's amazing. We're talking with author Stephen Auth, and the book is Visions of the Divine, An Artistic Journey into the Mystery of the Eucharist. I wanted to ask you about Orvieto, and this happened with, amazingly, Dr. Liz Lev, no surprise, when she took one of our groups on a tour through the cathedral again. I had been there probably, I don't know, by that point, because of my work and my pilgrimages, probably dozens of times. Love it. It's one of my favorite places, especially the Chapel of the Antichrist and Luca Signorelli's work there. But she pointed out the statue of Mary at the moment of, right, the Annunciation, and the look on her face, and the, you know, the statue that's on the left of Mary, and then this, and then St. Gabriel on the right. And yeah. I never really took the time until Liz was describing it to look at the moment that they captured, that the artist captured with, you know, this swirling, you know, movement around the angel, because you could just get the feeling of him coming into the room and Mary turning and looking. It was a very different look on Our Lady's face, but it became very real to me and reminded me that she was a human being, even though, of course, she was perfect and she was without sin, but that she was startled at first. And a lot of art doesn't express that, but this to me was like, it was just such a real moment that came to life for me.
It's so beautiful. You know, it's amazing how the Annunciation is such an important image. You know, the Met has 23, I was working on a project for Liz related to the Annunciation, and I was scoping out the Met for her on this, but there's 23 images of the Annunciation in the Met Museum in New York. It's the most seen image of anything they've got in the museum. And, you know, we use an Annunciation image in Visions in an unusual moment, but it's really very profound. It's the moment when we say amen at the receipt of communion. And what we talk with people about is, okay, the priest holds up the Eucharist and says, body of Christ. And often, a lot of us, you know, say amen sort of mechanically. We're kind of already got one foot out the door. The line's been long or whatever. Or sometimes we think, well, we're at least assenting that this is the body of Christ. For sure we're doing that. But the image that we use, and I know you know this image, Teresa, you know the image of the Annunciation by Fra Angelico at the mm-hmm. head of the stairs in St. Marco in Florence?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're coming up the stairs. The monks would go up there on their way to bed at night, so they always had to see this image. And It's so still and so quiet and so muted in tone. And Mary and the angel, their eyes are locked as she's considering this message from the angel of taking on basically Mission Impossible for a 15-year-old girl.
Mm.
And, wow. You know, if Joseph, she's going to become pregnant. If Joseph disowns her, she's going to get stoned in the village square. If that doesn't happen, she's got to escape the Romans and Herod. And then there's the 500-mile trek across a lawless desert. I mean, this is tough stuff. And what I love about it is Mary doesn't like negotiate. You know, she doesn't like have some side deal, is this, then that. She just looks at the angel and says yes in this very quiet way. And the angel bows before her, and now the Lamb of God within her womb.
Oh, giving me the chills.
That's the amen. That's what our amen is when we receive communion.
Well, beautifully said. Okay, quick question. We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to pick up on something you said at the beginning of the interview, Stephen. And you said the response to the book has been profound. Can you give us maybe one reflection you received from someone for that profound moment that they had after reading your book?
I was very moved by a priest I had spoken with who had read the book. And he said, Steve, this book is changing the way I celebrate the Mass. The reflections that you've got there, things like that amen of the Annunciation, and you know, we go to Ghent to see the Ghent altarpiece and the incredible image of the Lamb of God standing on the altar, looking out at us with these eyes of joy that were there as he pours his life's blood out into the chalices held by the angels. These images just leave me and many folks who have read it, including this priest I was talking with about it, you know. It's also so joyful. I mentioned Cardinal Dolan. I ran into him last night at this affair. He was being given an award. He deserves so many. But he gave me a big hug in his way he does. And he loves this book.
Wow.
He's been sending it to all the bishops. And
good.
He's saying, Steve, how's the book going? I love it. I'm going like, oh, my gosh. Cardinal Dolan, you're too much.
Well, you deserve it. It's a beautiful book, and I'm excited to talk to you again, and thank you for doing this. What's your next project, by the way? Have any idea?
I'm trying to be prayerful and let the Lord. I have like 5 or 6 in my head, but as with visions, this wasn't the next project I had planned. So I kind of let the Lord guide me on that.
And yeah, I'm doing that right now, too. Like you, your book is just so important with the art, and it's a lot of work, and I need a rest, too. I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of work.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh. Well, what a joy to have you join us today, Stephen. God bless you. Great to talk to you. Visions of the Divine, An Artistic Journey into the Mystery of the Eucharist. Stephen F. Auth is the author. It's from Sophia. Again, Visions of the Divine, An Artistic Journey into the Mystery of the Eucharist. Get it. You won't regret it. It's a beautiful book. We'll be right back. Hope you're having a great Friday already as we enter into Memorial Day weekend. We have a special program for you because you're special, because you're one of our family. We are family here at EWTN. And we have a great discussion with my friend Steve Ray, his wife Janet, our wonderful spiritual director who joined us on the pilgrimage, which is still, by the way, ongoing, the Saints and Shrines pilgrimage with Steve. It doesn't end, I think, until the end of this week. But I sat them down in Assisi and did a very beautiful interview about pilgrimage, about summer travel, about Italy, about the Pope, all kinds of great topics. And then I also sat down with our guide, Luca Malietta. I've worked with him for many years, and he talks about what's coming up in Italy, traveling for the rest of the Jubilee year, but also this big anniversary I talked about next year for St. Francis, the 800th anniversary of his passing. So it's going to be quite an event next year, all next year in Italy, all over the country, because he is the patron saint. So I think you will enjoy it. I hope you can tune in. And also in the second hour of the program, we're going to take you to two incredible cemeteries here in Italy, one outside of Rome, the other outside of Florence, dedicated to the men and women who sacrificed their lives for freedom around the world. And in this case, obviously Italy, most of those who are buried in the cemetery outside of Florence and outside of Rome lost their lives during World War II. But these are amazing places, and we will take you there on a Monday. Wishing you a beautiful and a peaceful Memorial Day weekend. We'll be back live with you on Tuesday. Ciao, ciao.